Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
7:14, another brutally hot day today, and after a conversation with Dr. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, I think our takeaway from today should be that the pets and taking care of them and the dogs, especially if you're out there playing with them, when they tell you they're hot, when they head for the door or try to get in, let them in because they're telling you that they're not feeling well and they need to be cooled off. And also he talked about muddy gums, and if the gums aren't bright red, that means they could be in distress. Just wanted to pass along. Cameron Henry joins us now, Louisiana State Senator, Senate President. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, buddy. How's everything?
I'm good. You're no lapdog, Cameron. I got to tell you that, and I'm proud of that, because it would be easy just to fall in line and do whatever the governor wants, and that's not what you're doing at all. You got all the bona fides. You graduate. First of all, with the Jesuit, right? I mean, there you go. Go Blue Jays. Then you got you got an LSU degree in political science, MBA from Tulane in finance, John F. Kennedy School of Government. You got the bona fides. So let's talk about what's going on with the L.A. Gator program and Cade Brumley. And I guess before we get to your specific part of it, we need to give some underpinning, some context on what the Gator program is and what you as a legislature were asked to do.
Sure. Well, the Gator program was created to replace the voucher program. Same group that pushed Gator pushed the voucher program. The voucher program didn't materialize the way everyone expected it to. We weren't having as much success.
Let's go back. I'm going to slow you down a little bit here because I think it's important that we understand the history of this. Tell me what the voucher program was.
Voucher program was a voucher for a child to go to a different school than they were currently attending. Mm-hmm. In essence, you were going to allow a child who was in a public school, very select, very narrowly focused, to go to a private school, or we'll call it a non-public school. It had about 6,000 students in it, roughly, but it wasn't having the success that we would have liked, either buy-in from other schools,
I'm sorry, Cameron, to interrupt you, but I think it is important that we get this down, and that is, how would you determine success? What's the metric?
Well, whether or not grade scores were improving, whether or not students were coming back to the program, just general basic metric, whether it was affordable, whether we're moving the needle for those particular group of students.
Okay.
And we really weren't having a lot of buy-in from that perspective. So kind of a new program that was going around the country is a Gator program, where in essence, it's similar to the voucher program, except it gives you a lot more flexibility, and that it's taking a student who is in a non-public school and giving them the funding to transfer to a non-public school, Catholic school, private school, whatever it might be. So if you had a kid at East Jefferson High School and that school just didn't fit for whatever reason, they could take that dollar amount, which would be the equivalent of the MFP. That's how we fund public education in Louisiana, mm-hmm. through the MFP. That equates to about, between the state portion and the local portion, comes up to about $8 billion a year. Mm-hmm. That's a B. That's $8 billion we spend on it in Louisiana. The average public school student costs in that program about $17,000 a year. That's the dollar amount associated with that. That's half the state puts in. half the locals put in through the taxes we pay.
So per student, you're saying that's what public school tuition in essence is, $17,000, or that's what it costs?
It's on average. It's on about $17,000. Obviously, if you have a child with special needs, using you pay a little bit more than those that don't need, that don't have special needs. But it's an average of about $17,000 per student.
Go ahead, continue, please.
So what the latest program that they came up with last year was a program to allow, start off where a child who goes to a public school would be able to transfer that dollar amount that they go to a non-public school. Great. If the school doesn't fit, I have four children. There's a school for each one of them. Each one of them has different needs. And I think the ability to give a child a choice to go somewhere else shouldn't be hindered by the legislature. The problem we had with this program is it originally started off with, we were just going to take the state portion of the MSP, not the local portion, just that state portion, and allow that to pay for the child to go to a non-public school, which isn't very complicated and should be relatively simple.
So that'd be about $8,500.
About $8,500. There's three categories. There's $5,500, $7,500, and $15,000. Those are the three categories of Gator based on your poverty income and whether you're special needs and so forth. Mm-hmm. Then this group came back and said, we need you to fund the local portion of the MFP, because remember the MFP is state portion and local portion.
To get you back to $17,000 a student, right?
Well, it's not going to be that much, roughly that much. They said, we want the state to pay the equivalent of the local portion. So, okay. So now we went from just an even swap. We're going to take MFP dollars from the state side, give the kid, for lack of a better term, give the kid a check to go to whatever school he wants to go to, and you move on. Now the state's putting the local portion in. So the thought when it originally came out, this would be relatively neutral to the state, or you would just be moving money around, meaning the state, the non-public money would just go to public school. That's when it starts adding up very quickly. Mm-hmm. So if you look at Texas, this program is capped out at $1 billion in Texas because it grows very fast. Every year they add a kindergarten class. And you're not taking kids from the public school system and moving them to a non-public school system. In essence, you'd be reducing the student count and the MFP dollar over time would go down. The program is moving towards the idea of we're just going to pay for kids to go to school now. So if you currently go to a non-public school, if you currently go to St. Martin's and you qualify, the state's just going to pay for you to go to private school, which can grow exponentially over time, very fast. And as the time you've been on the air, you've probably seen that once you give something to someone in the government, it is very difficult to take it away.
Yep.
So every time we fund a kindergarten class, we become responsible for funding those children all the way through high school, college, and obviously if they go to TOPS, we can actually fund them through college now. So the growth of the program, it became very concerning for me and other members. The fact that it's a new program, I mean, this is the first year, and we were going to expand it before we got to see any metrics of actually what was working and how successful the current voucher kids were going to do. We slowed down what the governor wanted to do, gave them enough to cover the existing voucher kids. Those are the kids that were in the program that we previously discussed, and mm-hmm. we moved them over to this. There was some money left over because not all the voucher kids actually signed back up to be in Gator. They went on their own way. So now there's some money left over, and they're trying to figure out whether they want that to go to special needs kids or what level of public school kids you want to go to.
Cameron, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back because I mentioned Jesuit before. You're a Jesuit graduate. Not everybody that applies to Jesuit gets in, right?
Probably not.
No. Yeah, so I would not think Jesuit would be interested in anybody with Gator money, would they?
That's when we get back from the break, I'll explain to you the problem we had with that.
Good. Thank you. Cameron Henry, our guest, 721 Traffic Now, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Cameron Henry, Louisiana State Senator, Senate President, talking about the Gator program. Well, we haven't yet got to Cade Brumley, but Cameron, I was talking about the Gator program, kids getting into Jesuit, and it just seems to me that the market has already chosen which private Catholic schools, or however you want to phrase it, are performing the best. So why subsidize parents for sending their kids there when the only thing you're going to do is prop up schools that are not doing so well with Gator public tax dollars? Take it from there, your thoughts.
Well, that was one of the questions the argument or discussions we were having is that how many spots are available? How many chairs are available? Empty seats are around, not only just New Orleans, not just Jefferson Parish, around the state to fill for these kids to go in. And then what do those schools look like? Right, if you're taking a kid from a public school that they just don't fit and you want to move them to a non-public school, well, which one do you want to move them to? Can they accept the student? Is that going to be a good fit? And then how do you measure that? Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily the Gator program doesn't have the potential to be successful. One of the jobs that the roles we have in the Senate and both as a House member and a Senate member, because I serve in both, is you don't get to just go off of the cliff notes of something. Mm-hmm. You can't just get excited and throw money at it. You stop for a minute and say, okay, prove to me that this is going to be a success and prove to me that we're not tying our hands in the future for programs that across the country have grown exponentially year after year after year. So that's all we did with this program. We just slowed it down a little bit, give the ability for it to prove itself. And next year, if we can gauge, I can come on your show and say, hey, look, it's been a success. These 5,000 kids are now reading at a higher level, doing math at a better level. They're on to college or a trade school. Well, then so be it. Then you grow the program. If not, you readjust.
Let me jump in here, Cameron, and on the other side of it, when it comes to economies of scale, if you're going to have people taking their 17,000 or whatever it is, 8,000, 8,500 out of a public school and taking it to a private school, at some point, the kids that don't decide to go to private, I can see this happening one of a couple of different ways. Either everybody, if there is enough money, gets private money and then public schools don't exist anymore, or because of economies of scale, people take their 8,500 or 17,000, whatever it is, and take it to a private school, and then public schools don't.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Don't have enough to operate. And what happens to the kids that don't get Gator money?
Well, one of the issues we have is that you're not actually reducing the dollar amount that's going to the MFP. You're just creating another fund.
So the MFP money's got to come from somewhere, right?
It's got to come from the state general fund.
So we're talking about subsidizing private tuition at that point. Yes or no?
Correct. That is. And look, I'm not saying that like some people on the listening right now who work two jobs to send their kids to a non-public school. Some of them would love the idea as long as they qualify for the subsidy. Mm-hmm. If you don't, well, then you're now subsidizing a kid going to public school, which is part of our responsibility. But now you're also subsidizing a kid going to a non-public school. Yep. So you're going to be paying for two or three kids that aren't yours to go to different schools around the area. Yep. That's just a hard sell for me in Jefferson Parish. But that's why we slowed it down, and we'll see if we have success next between now and the end of next session. And if it does. If it does, maybe we can adjust the budgeting to that.
So going back to the bigger picture of looking down the road here, it does seem as though if you take funding, I guess I just answered my own question. If we're going to talk about a different bucket of money, that bucket of money has to come from somewhere, and it's going to wind up with taxpayers somehow subsidizing the private tuition for kids that choose to go to private school, not necessarily the best private schools, but the private schools that are just kind of hanging on and have open seats because the marketplace, the parents have determined what are already the best private schools. Is that inaccurate?
Well, I mean, that's a possibility with it. That's a possibility, yes. The other question we had about the program is it actually creates an online portal for people to go buy services with the money that's left over from their tuition, which we could have another show on that, kind of creating a mini Amazon for services for these students that members just couldn't get their arms around the need for that.
So. I admire you standing up for this, and like you're saying, you can't just go off the Cliffs notes. You are the Senate president. You got the bona fides, as I said. You've been around, and I hope you come back. Maybe we can spend an hour talking about this one day.
Yes, sir. Happy to do
it. Thank you. Hi, Cameron. Take it easy. Cameron Henry, Louisiana State Senator, Senate President. We'll take a break. Come back. June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. We'll talk with Dr. Michelle Longo from Tulane about that right now. We pause for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. I lost a family member a long time ago to Alzheimer's. I hope some strides have been made since then. This was back in the 80s. We're joined now by Dr. Michelle Longo, an associate professor of neurology at Tulane School of Medicine, board-certified neurologist with special interest in cognition and aging, to talk about what we know about Alzheimer's, some of the symptoms, warning signs, how you can help take care of your brain in general as you age. And I want to open a text line here at 504-260-1870. While the doctor can't treat you specifically or diagnose you specifically, if you have any general questions, we'll entertain them. With that, we welcome in Dr. Michelle Longo. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
I'm
good, thank you.
Thank you. Let's talk about Alzheimer's. People sometimes know of it. They don't know about it. Tell me what it is.
So Alzheimer's is a disease, a progressive disease that causes a decline in thinking and in memory function. It's the most common cause of dementia. Dementia is a general term that means that there's a change in thinking or in memory that affects day-to-day activities.
So when it comes to people aging and saying they're getting Alzheimer's, is they forget this, forget that, forget the other thing. Let me take a step back first. When it comes to ages, at what age is Alzheimer's likely to present itself?
So the biggest risk factor for Alzheimer's is as we age. People over 65 and older are at a higher risk. About 1 in 9 people ages 65 and older will get Alzheimer's, and that risk goes up considerably if you look at people that are 85 and older. It's 1 in 3 people. But I want to emphasize, 1 in 3 people over the age of 85 get Alzheimer's, but that means 2 in 3 don't. Mm-hmm. So it's important to know that, you know, we sometimes people call Alzheimer's old timers disease. Mm-hmm. That's not right. It's not part of normal aging.
So what's happening in the brain, and why does it happen as we get older, and especially as you get to be 65 and then 85? I'm just wondering what the relationship is there.
So we know that as we age, there can be the accumulation of changes in the brain that are called amyloid plaques and something else called tau tangles. And these are changes that could be seen in the brain that we've known about for 100 plus years since Dr. Alzheimer's himself described them. So they accumulate with age. There's other factors that can accelerate their accumulation. Other health factors can contribute, and genetics, lifestyle factors, and other medical conditions can cause these changes to become more prevalent.
I know at one point it could only be diagnosed for certain after death, I guess, with an autopsy. Can you now, is there a test that tells whether somebody has Alzheimer's or not?
You're correct. For a long time, you are right. We could just look for these changes in the brain in an autopsy to make the diagnosis. Now there are other tests that can aid in the diagnosis. There are blood tests, there are imaging tests that can be helpful in seeing these changes while the person is still alive.
Somebody texted in and wants to know if the symptoms of Alzheimer's can be, or if excessive drinking can mimic the symptoms of Alzheimer's.
You know, there's a lot of conditions that mimic Alzheimer's. I mean, you know, excessive drinking can affect your memory. It can affect your thinking. It can put you at risk for other, conditions like vitamin deficiencies or affect other risks like your quality of your sleep or you know, being more likely to have a head injury from a fall. So there are multiple ways that could contribute to this term. I'll use the term dementia, that there could be changes in the thinking that affect day-to-day living. That's why it's important. There are a lot of mimics to Alzheimer's out there, is to see the doctor that knows you best, your primary care doctor, to get an evaluation to be worked up for these possible mimics.
Somebody texted in about brain shrinkage and diagnosis of Alzheimer's. Is that a way to diagnose Alzheimer's?
That's not a very specific way. That could be something that's seen with Alzheimer's, but there are many conditions that can cause shrinkage of the brain. So that in and of itself may or may not be related to Alzheimer's, but it's not specific. There's multiple other conditions that could cause shrinkage of the brain.
And I guess drinking would be one of them, because I've heard from the time I'm a teenager, you're destroying brain cells, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, the excessive drinking can, you know, it's not something that promotes healthy brain aging.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I want to drill down a little bit with the difference between forgetfulness and Alzheimer's. And I know about an example I used to give about car keys, and we'll talk about that when we return. It's June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. We're talking with Dr. Michelle Longo from Tulane about what we know about Alzheimer's. We'll continue the conversation when we come back. 7:51, 9 till 8, traffic now, WWL. We're talking to Tommy Tucker, WWL. It's 7:54, talking to Dr. Michelle Longo, Associate Professor of Neurology at Tulane School of Medicine, Board Certified Neurologist. Special interest in cognition and aging. It's Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. Doctor, somebody, and I'm getting a lot of texts about this, about telling the difference between regular forgetfulness and Alzheimer's. And I heard an example given about car keys, and maybe you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think, we often hear people say that, you know, it's okay to misplace things like your car keys or your cell phone or something from time to time. If that becomes something that's happened more regularly and it's starting to impact your day-to-day living, then that's a red flag. Or if you misplace something but you find it in a very unusual place, like you find the car keys in the refrigerator, that would be something that should get your attention.
And what I heard was that if you forget where to put the car keys, that's one thing, not regularly, but if you forget what they for, what you use them for, then that could be troublesome.
Yes, that's correct.
So is there any way, what kind of advancements have been made since the 80s, or are we making in treating this or preventing it or curing it?
So there's been a considerable amount of advances since the 80s. Number one is that we understand that through lifestyle modifications, by focusing on certain lifestyle factors, you can reduce the risk of dementia by 45%. So that's one, is this concept that you can prevent dementia. That is a new concept compared to where our thinking was in the 80s. We have we have medications that can help with some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's that have been around for decades. But what is new are these infusions that can target the protein in the brain, these beta, the amyloid plaques that we talked about earlier. We can, with infusions, remove those plaques and slow the decline of Alzheimer's. So we don't have a cure. We still don't have a cure, but we have treatments that can help with symptoms. We have treatments that can slow the progression of the disorder.
Somebody texted in. I'm sorry, go ahead, doctor.
Yeah. No, go ahead. But I was just saying, we have much better tools to make the diagnosis.
Somebody texted in, is it hereditary? Somebody else wants to know, what about diet and exercise, and how does that influence the development, progression of dementia? Somebody else says, if you notice that dementia is starting, how do you keep it from progressing?
So the first, there are genetic
markers?
Markers that can increase the risk of Alzheimer's, and that may be important to know. It can help with understanding what's your personal risk. And yeah, that can help with motivation for many people, because we are aware of lifestyle modifications that can reduce the risk of dementia. And many of those are things that you may already be familiar with, that the cardiologists have been telling us. What's good for the heart is good for the head. And those are things like getting exercise, eating a good, healthy, plant-based diet like the Mediterranean diet, getting good quality sleep, being social, you know, do your exercise with someone else. It's important to have social interactions to keep our brains healthy. And then using our brains, doing, you know, learning something new, a language, a hobby, an instrument. But using our brain is an important part to keeping it strong.
If somebody does notice that they are is beginning to show signs of dementia, or somebody they care about is drinking, one of the things they should take off the table right away?
I would say so, but I think that the most important thing to do, I mean, that is definitely a risk factor that you have control over. You know, we've talked about that earlier in the show. But the most important thing is, if you have concerns about yourself or someone else, is to get an evaluation, to start with the doctor that knows you best, to get a general workup. And they may refer you to a neurologist or to a brain specialist for further testing.
Thank you, Dr. Is there a site people can go to find out more about this that you know of?
We at Tulane, we have the Tulane Healthy Brain Aging Institute, which can be a resource. And also, I think that people would find the Alzheimer's Association, ALZ.org, to be a good resource, especially for helping to differentiate normal aging from red flags that could be associated with Alzheimer's.
Thank you, Dr. Longo.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.